Auntie, am I on, Tom? Good. So when I was coming to write this talk, Jonty's encouragement to me was like, don't worry, Sam. Tim Keller says your first 500 preachers are never that good. So this is the first of 500. Here we go. I think we all probably know what it's like to feel afraid. Perhaps some of us know not only what it's like to feel afraid, but also terrified even. And it's certainly not a feeling that we enjoy. We don't want to feel afraid, yet so many of us fear so many different things. I wonder when the last time was you lost sleep because you're afraid of something. Or how many nights you've spent in a restless state because there's something on your mind, something you fear that might happen. Or I wonder if you've ever not been able to just switch off just because of like the current circumstance, something that's going on, that you're just constantly worried about, something that you're afraid might happen. Maybe you're dreading the next day you have to go into the office, the next phone conversation you have to have with your boss. I wonder what things in our current circumstances are causing us to feel fear and to even lose sleep. All of us, though, we will go through or we will have been through or maybe we're even going through times that are difficult, times that we find things are happening and we don't understand why. But when we're faced with kind of adversity, with pressures, we have to make a choice between fear or faith. So when I was younger, I watched a particularly terrifying episode of Midsummer Murders. And I don't really remember what happened. I think my parents will remember this. But basically, at some point throughout the episode, I think there was some grisly kind of half-decayed corpse. And for whatever reason, it got stuck in my imagination. And I just remember laying kind of in bed, scared. It's just there, stuck in my brain. I think when we remember, I think I came in. And I was like, I didn't want the light off. Stuff like that. But anyway. So I think I went and slept in there in the end. But as adults, things like that might not frighten us. But we still do have nightmares. And our fears now are probably much more real than those we had as a child. Like David, who wrote this psalm, we all face kind of opposition and we have adverse adversaries from time to time. And sometimes it might seem that given our current opposition, how can we feel anything other than fear? Well, in this psalm, Jonty read, we're going to look at God's promises and David's circumstances. They seem to be in contrast with one another, or even in contradiction. God has told David he's going to be a king, that his line will last forever, and that he will have many other blessings. Yet David is, as he's singing this psalm, his son has betrayed him, risen up against him, and led the people of Israel in rebellion to overthrow him. And similarly for us, we have promises that we've received from God, such as this one. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. But if the world rises up against us, and you know, if your circumstances they seem to contradict the promises that we have from God, how will you respond with fear or with faith? But as we'll see as we look at this psalm, despite his circumstances, David still trusts in the Lord for deliverance from his enemies. He still confidently prays to God. He still trusts in God for salvation. He can still lay down and sleep. He doesn't fear his enemies, and he's enjoying God's blessing. So what are David's circumstances as he sits down to write this psalm? When you're reading through the psalms, doing four in a row, so I'll say this now, it might be helpful. It's helpful to pay attention to a little bit of writing before the psalm, kind of before the chapter marker and the verse one indicator. They're actually part of the Bible, unlike the, in my copy it says, Save Me, O God, in like italics. That's just a title someone stuck in later. And the titles can be helpful, but they're not actually a part of the Bible. But the a psalm, that bit is a part of the original text. And here it tells us, David wrote this psalm when he fled from Absalom, who's his son. And because we have that, it allows us to pinpoint exactly the situation David was in when he was singing these words. And in particular with this psalm, it's David's circumstances and his response to those circumstances that's going to help us understand why faith in God is always a better response than fear, no matter what might be going on. So some of you may know this story. When David's son Absalom betrayed him, the full account is given in 2 Samuel chapters 15 to 17, but we don't have time to read it all, it's quite long. So instead, here's my summary of it. So David's son Absalom, he spent 4 years in Jerusalem telling everyone that the king was unjust and how much fairer the country would be if only he was in charge. And the people believed Absalom. So in 2 Samuel 15, we're told that Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And at the end of this four-year period of kind of bad-mouthing the king and gaining support for himself, Absalom, now confident in his, in the people's loyalty to himself, he declares himself king, and he calls upon all the tribes of Israel to come and support him. So it doesn't take long for this news to reach David, news of his son's betrayal, who quickly flees Jerusalem, and he heads towards the River Jordan, and Absalom is pursuing David and those still loyal to him with his massive army. He's got thousands and thousands of people supporting him. And it's during all this that David writes the words that we've just read in Psalm 3. So when he writes in verse 1, "O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me." Think Mohamed Morsi, is that how you say his name? Yeah? Is the recently ex-president of Egypt. I'm sure you've seen the news and seen the pictures and the video of the protesters in Cairo. Thousands of people lining the streets, all rising up against Morsi. Well, the situation for David, as he writes this, is remarkably similar, except that the people who wanted him out of power, who wanted him dead, were being led by his own son against him. And the situation that David found himself in here must be pretty close to being kind of his worst nightmare come true. So Matt's not here, but imagine if Oscar grew up and... that's not funny, is it? Anyway, imagine Oscar grew up only then to try and kill Matt. It's almost unimaginable. Sorry, yeah, it is unimaginable. But that's what's happening to David here as he's writing this. And that could be the case for us. Maybe our children aren't literally trying to murder us, but it could well be it's our family circumstances that are giving us a reason to feel afraid. And maybe through no fault of our own. Here, David's found himself in this dire situation, but he hasn't done anything particular to deserve it. And also think of Jesus, who never ever did anything wrong. He was hated, put to death. The world's just against God and against his people. So long as you're a follower of Jesus, there will be those who are against you. You will have enemies, and those enemies might not be as aggressive as those people chasing David, trying to kill him, or those people who shouted for Jesus, crucify him. But God's people are always going to face opposition. Maybe if we were holding this midweek gathering in a secret kind of location somewhere in North Korea today, we would identify with David a lot more when he writes, "How many are my foes who have set themselves against me all around?" So in those first two verses of the psalm, verses 1 and 2, we're told what David's situation is. It's a pretty dreadful one. But now let's look at how he's going to respond in verses 3 to 8. Is he going to respond fearfully, or is he going to respond with faith? Well, for the short answer, you can just read verse 6, where David writes, "I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around." But how can David not be afraid of the terrible situation he's found himself in? Well, verse 3 helps understand that. It's as he turns his eyes to God in verse 3 that he responds with faith, as he remembers that the Lord is a shield about him. As David writes, he's on the eve of battle. Possibly even writing on the morning of the day that Absalom fought David. Absalom's army fought David's army. So he knows, he's in military mode. He's thinking, how am I going to beat this guy? All these people are trying to attack me. That's why I think he uses the picture of a shield in verse 3. And he's fought a lot of wars and won a lot of battles. So he knows that a shield's useful for defending himself, but he knows that it can't save him from his enemies. Only the Lord can deliver him, can shield him, the one who is his glory and his personal shield, his divine carer. And if we are one of God's people, God will shield us too, and he will also deliver us, because he has promised to deliver us, and God keeps his promises. That's what gives David confidence as he calls to God in prayer in verse 7. God has brought him through difficult times in the past, and David's convinced God's not going to give up on him now. Save me, O God, he cries, for you have struck all my enemies on the cheekbone. You have broken the teeth of the ungodly. So David recognises that God has been faithful to his promises in the past, and he's not afraid now because he knows that God's not given up on him. Even though many are saying that there is no salvation for him in God, in verse 2, and that's that can be a lie we're often told as well, that there is no salvation for us in God, that we shouldn't, we shouldn't be surprised when we're attacked like this, because after all, when Jesus was, when he was attacked and, put on the cross forcefully, that's how people kind of verbally abused him, like, come on, save yourself, making a joke of God's salvation. Or maybe the song says, when Satan tempts me to despair, it's a very, common tactic the devil used to try and put Christians off, try and make us doubt God, his word and his promises. Or maybe you just feel the weight of your own sin, feeling particularly heavy at the moment. Or maybe your friends or family or people in the office are telling you that you're wasting your time coming to Wednesday Night Central, going to church, and that Christianity is just a load of nonsense. Well, I think what David wants to say to us in this psalm is that it's not, that God's promises never fail, that his love is steadfast, and that what he has promised we will receive, because ultimately our salvation belongs to God. It's him who's going to make good on the promises. And like David, we too can also look back in history and see God at work rescuing us, striking our enemies on the cheek and breaking their teeth, as it were. We can look to the cross where Jesus defeated sin. We can look to the resurrection where he proved that even death has been beaten. And we can have assurance that our greatest adversities, not people, but sin and the punishment that we deserve for sin and death, have been defeated for us by God. But I should point out at this point, there are some differences between us and David, who I think it was Tom got asked to explain last week, is like a foreshadow of Jesus. So whereas God often saves, when you read the Psalms or read Samuel, God will save David from his physical enemies there and then, a kind of immediate human adversaries. God doesn't promise the same for us. And like David, similarly Jesus, whereas he could lie down and go to sleep in the back of a boat while a storm blew all around him, before the disciples terrified that they were going to be killed, he could be confident that he wouldn't drown. But we don't have that same assurance from God. If we're in a boat and a storm blows up around us, we could drown. Or if you're in a fight or in a war, like if you have to fight in David's army, or if you're taking the gospel around the world, like all these missionary stories we've been hearing from like Tim, Matt and John T. Loads of those guys got killed, and similarly we could be killed as well. God's promise to us is protection through the storm of this life, not from the storm. And in this life we will face adversity, and one day we will sink beneath the waters and we will die. But even so, we need not even fear that, because just the other side of the waves, there's our reward, eternal glory with God forever in a perfect world, and where the waters will never rise up against us, ever again, and where we'll be perfectly safe from all of our enemies. And there will be a day when all the numerous enemies of God and his people are defeated once and for all. But until then, we can go on trusting God, not fearing, because of the promises of salvation we have. They're sure. Okay, so finally, let's finish up by looking at verse 5, where David, he lays down to sleep. Verse 5 says, "I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me." So remember what situation David's in here. Thousands and thousands of people have risen up against him. They're trying to kill him so that they can put his own kind of rebel son, who's the leader of the motley gang, on the throne. And they're all around him. Verse 6, he can't run away. But yet he sings, "You, O Lord, are my shield. You have heard my prayers from your holy hill, and you have proved yourself to be faithful." And therefore, David trusts him. So despite his circumstances, David has decided to have faith in the Lord, and rather than to fear just because of this situation that he finds himself in. And as a result, he feels he can lay down and sleep. And it's probably not just like a little nap. I'm sure he was a good boy and got his full 8 hours every night. But you can't really get more peaceful, more resting than sleep, can you? But that's how, you know, that's the effect God's promises have had on David. Even with all this going on, you know, this could be the very morning of the battle with his own son. And he may have just woken up from night's sleep. And no matter how bad things get, David finds that he can rest. And he can know this peace of God. It says in the New Testament, it's the peace of God that transcends all understanding. It's not kind of humanly possible, I think, to just be perfectly calm in that situation, unless God had something to do with it. So secondly as well, sleep in the Bible can often be used as a picture of death. I think Jesus refers to death as sleep. So does Paul in 1 Corinthians. And for the person who has faith in God and his promises, death to them should be no more frightening than falling asleep, because you know, they know that after a time they're going to wake up again and they're going to feel refreshed because the Lord will sustain them. And if we can trust God even with death, you know, which tends to be looked at, you know, by secular society, that's kind of the final thing. That's kind of the ultimate bad thing to happen to you, to die. But even if we can trust God with even that, then surely that gives us hope to be able to face kind of whatever may be, you know, causing us to fear now. And no matter what situation we find ourselves in, there's nothing that can separate us from that promise, from that hope that we have in Jesus. So at the end of the day, when all the people rose up against David, and when people set themselves against us, against the church, the worst thing, Jesus says, well, the worst thing they can do is kill our bodies. But we have a hope that goes beyond kind of this life, which stretches, you know, into eternity. And, you know, it's that's secure, that's kept for us by God. It can never be taken away. So whatever situation you find yourself in, no matter what your circumstances or how great kind of the, you know, how overwhelming and horrible it might feel, no matter what the opposition, just trust God and his promises, and, you know, we don't need to fear, because he will shield us, and ultimately he's not going to let these things prevail over us. I doubt any of us are ever going to face a circumstance quite like David's, where, you know, imagine all of England have been risen up, like Oscar's rallied England behind him, and he's led them to attack Matt, and Matt's gone to Scotland, and the Scottish have rallied behind Matt, and they're about to have a big fight, you know, and try and kill each other. That's like modernising. Yeah, that's fine. That's what it's like, kind of. Glad Oscar's not here. But we're probably not going to find ourselves in a situation that bad. That's pretty horrendous. But it's obviously easy for me to say that now. But when you're actually, you know, faced with, you know, some situation, something that you find frightening, it feels very different. But you can hopefully look to David and how he responds in this situation, which is probably going to be worse than any situation we're going to face. And hopefully we can find the same kind of contentment and rest and peace that he can find. I know, like, most people can't sleep if they've got, like, an exam the next day, let alone if they're about to, like, go to war with their son who wants to murder them. So, that's the kind of, you know, rest and peace we can enjoy if we fully place our faith in God. So, you know, therefore, all that said, if we, like David, place our trust in God, we can find contentment and rest now, and, you know, because we have that hope in the future, as it says in verse 8, for salvation belongs to the Lord, and his blessing will be with us and on his people. Cool. That was shorter than intended. Okay, fine.
Do you want to pray for us?
Yep.